2-0 on the way. Bounced in the hole and through. Here comes Springer. And the Blue Jays win it. They find a way as they score two in the bottom of the ninth.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Wednesday, June 29th. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We are brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. And our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. And Ben, baseball is a results business. You win, you lose. It impacts the conversation going forward. It can paper over a whole lot of stuff if you win. It can magnify a whole lot of stuff if you lose. As we're sitting here right now, it is the morning after Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s walk-off against the Boston Red Sox on Tuesday, June 28th, and I am, like, struck by how different the conversations and the discourse would be here today on Wednesday, June 29th, if Blue Jays win, if they lose, right? Because they win. They get a couple of ground ball singles from Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to walk off the Red Sox, off Hansel Robles. They win. So we are not talking about Teoscar Hernandez getting doubled off at first base. We are not talking about Trent Thornton giving up a go-ahead bomb on a 1-0 fastball right down the middle. We're not talking about Tim Mays's shakiness. We're talking about how the Blue Jays are resurgent. They've taken two off the Red Sox. But could you imagine if they lost that game, just what the tenor would be like in that sliding doors moment?
Absolutely. And I think just as easily for the Red Sox, it's the same thing because, you know, they were pretty close to beating the Blue Jays in a nice comeback win. Instead, the conversation in Boston was around Tanner Houck and the fact that, you know, their closer is not vaccinated, not traveling with the team, and then they blow this lead against the Jays. So, you know, that game felt like more of a tone shifter, more of a turning point than most games. I think you could say that about a fair number of games in the course of a season where, you know, the tone around the team does shift. But last night, that game where Vladdy walks it off for the second time this season, it did feel a little different. It felt like a pretty significant game. Of course, they're all just one of 162, and you just have to keep banking those wins and trust that you'll be in the playoffs at the end. But that one definitely did feel more significant.
The Blue Jays obviously playing three against the Red Sox right now. They're definitely going to win that series. They could sweep it, or they could just go 2-1 in it. And then they got the Rays for five over Canada Day weekend, five games in 72 hours. So it's eight games against the opponents that you were directly competing for postseason position with. I mean, last week of June / first week of July, it's still, nowhere near stretch time in the MLB season, but where do you kind of stand on, like, the importance of this stretch for the Blue Jays in the context of their season in a whole, like, and how crucial, how critical this week is, and how it could, what kind of consequences could come from it going forward as the Blue Jays near the trade deadline?
I think it's a big week on a couple levels. And, you know, of course, you're playing your division rivals. Red Sox and Rays are probably two of the most likely teams that the Blue Jays would be competing for wild cards with, could potentially face them in the first round of the playoffs come October. So it's significant on that level. Then it's also, what do we learn about the Blue Jays during this stretch? We're going to find out some more information about the back of their rotation. And I think that by the time we record our next episode, we'll have a better sense of how Yusei Kikuchi's doing. We'll have a better sense of how that number six starter position is looking, because of course they'll need one on Saturday for that doubleheader against Tampa Bay. So is that Casey Lawrence? Is that Thomas Hatch? We'll get a sense of how that plays against a pretty good team in the Rays. So to me, that's one of the variables. And you alluded to it before with the bullpen and Meza and Thornton and some of their struggles. But in a stretch like this, where you're playing so much volume, the bullpen will be tested. And, you know, so often we say, the bullpen is depleted. The bullpen is depleted. And that's true. But I think more to the point, it's just not a very good bullpen. And so we're going to figure out more about how much this is a product of it being tired, how much it's a product of the bullpen just not being good enough. We'll learn a bit about Sergio Romo. So to me, it's the pitching that I'll be watching closely during this stretch.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I do think it's a big week. I think it's a big week because of the opposition that you're playing and just how tight the standings are and the fact that the Yankees just continue to run away with the divisions. So, like, more, you know, increasingly you're looking at competing for, like, a home wild card spot. You don't want to be the team that's going on the road for, you know, three, possibly only two, to play your opponent in that wildcard series. You want to host those games. And you're directly competing with the Red Sox and the Rays for that, who have remarkably similar records to the Blue Jays. So I think it's big for that reason. It's big, as you said, for the starting rotation. Big, big major question marks about Yusei Kikuchi and Jose Berríos right now. Very different question marks, very different situations, but two guys who, like, you know, really need to right the ship in a big way. And the Blue Jays, as you alluded to, not really having the luxury of depth with which to really even consider alternatives at this point because of the volume of games and innings that need to be covered this week. You mentioned the doubleheader on Saturday. Like, my understanding is that's Thomas Hatch's start on Saturday. I don't know if you have any reason to believe otherwise, but I believe it's going to be Hatch. You're with me on that?
I mean, yeah.
You mentioned Lawrence as well, and that raised my eyebrow because my belief is it's going to be Hatch.
Well, the one possibility here would be if Kikuchi was not to make his start. And it certainly seems that Kikuchi will. But if Kikuchi wasn't going to make his start, then does that move Hatch up? Does that open up Saturday? So that would be the only possibility that I could see things shifting, but no reason to believe that Hatch wouldn't be that guy.
Yeah, my belief is that Kikuchi's going to make the start because there just isn't an alternative, really, and just for all the reasons I said before, because of your depth and because of the volume of games this week. So this is based off of conversations I was having like in Milwaukee on the weekends. Those possible things have changed since then, but I think you're going to see Kikuchi on Thursday, and I think you're going to see Thomas Hatch on Saturday, and Casey Lawrence will remain as that like very thin layer of depth that the Blue Jays still have starting wise. So yeah, it's a really big week for those reasons. It's a really big week for the bullpen, as you said, because look, when we saw it on Tuesday night, Trent Thorne's going to get the ball in leverage. It's going to happen because that's the situation that you're in right now. Matt Gage is going to get the ball in leverage. The guy who was like in independent ball a couple years ago, started the year at AAA, 29-year-old rookie, is getting the ball in leverage, A, because he's pitched well, and I think that he does deserve to see a look in a more pressureful situation than we've seen him, but B, because the Blue Jays have no other options. Sergio Romo, when it's official and when he's activated, probably going straight into a pretty big spot. You'd rather ease him in, but you just don't have the luxury of that right now. And he just need innings covered at this point as well. So he's going to go straight into leverage, despite the fact that things have not gone well for him this year. And I think it's a big week for Charlie Montoyo. Like, I think it's a big week for him as a manager. I think it's a big week for how he deploys guys, how long his rope is with certain guys. Think about the decisions he has to make, right? During Yusei Kikuchi's outing, how far to let him go. During Jose Berríos' outing, if he's getting rocked again. Like, think about the bullpen deployment decisions he has to make with what he's been given. Think about the lineup decisions and the late game pinch hitting and how you manage these games. They're so important. They need to be managed like playoff games. I think it's a really big week for Charlie Montoyo as well, in a lot of ways. So I just think it's a big week for everybody with this team. So like, it's like, I typically would like hesitate to be like, oh, it's a crucial week, it's a critical week in, you know, June and July. No, I actually do think this is a really big week. And then you go out on like a 7-game West Coast road trip immediately after that. The schedule is just relentless.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think anytime you have a week at home against, you know, big division rivals, that's going to be huge. And especially at a time that the team is trying to find some answers on the pitching staff. I mean, you mentioned Romo, and, you know, they're going to a 39-year-old who's throwing 86 miles an hour and hoping that he can offer them something. I mean, if I'm the Jays, I am definitely trying to ease him into low leverage, but you know, it's not necessarily possible. There's not a ton of spots where you can do that. But you know, he's someone that has really struggled this year. He will not be, you know, quote unquote, the answer. But at the same time, you look around baseball right now, and patience will just be required before the Blue Jays can make bigger moves. And they're not the only contender that's out there looking around for help. Certainly there are other teams, including the Red Sox, including the Rays. And both those teams, by the way, if they're thinking about possibly playing a playoff series in Toronto, 3 games potentially on Canadian soil, they have to really adjust their plans when it comes to acquiring players and acquire players who are vaccinated. So a lot for these teams to consider, a lot of needs out there, but it's just the trade market, from what I'm hearing and seeing, is just not crystallizing yet. And we're not at the point where you can go out there and make bigger moves. So you hope that Sergio Romo is able to help and kind of patch things over. But to me, that looks like more of a, you know, stopgap, more of a patchwork kind of solution than someone that you say, okay, like he's here. This is our answer for the bullpen.
It's a good point to put in the context of MLB, as we always try to do here, because it isn't just the Blue Jays, right? Like every team is like scrambling to put it together right now. You mentioned, you know, the Red Sox, and we've seen their bullpen this week and how things look as soon as you take Houck out of there. The Rays, I mean, as injury stricken as any club this year, when you think no Lau, no Kiermaier, no Margot, they just got Franco back, right? They haven't had Glass now all years. Nino's hurt. I mean, they're, you know, dealing with some serious injuries to key pieces on the weekend. And we're in Milwaukee. I'm, you know, Yusei Kikuchi is having the outing that Yusei Kikuchi has. And then I'm kind of looking up and I'm like, oh yeah, the Milwaukee Brewers, who are in first place in the NL Central, built to win, built around pitching, are starting Chichi Gonzalez. Like that's who they're starting right now, because, you know, Ashby's out, and who else were they missing? Like they were missing Woodruff at the time, I think. Like, you know, they had all kinds of issues as well. And they're like a team that's trying to win, and throwing out a guy like Chichi Gonzalez, who probably has like a 7 career ERA. So like every team is scrambling right now. It's from a front office perspective as well, as you mentioned, right? Like, there isn't a ton of trade chatter right now because teams are dealing with so many other things. Like, you're trying to prep for a draft at the same time. I don't think any front office is happy about the draft being pushed back to when it was pushed back to, where it just aligns with the trade deadline, is creating so much more work. If you were, and not that anybody has ever felt sorry for the New York Yankees ever, but if you are the New York Yankees, like, you had an Aaron Judge arbitration case that you were dealing with up until very recently. That's a really high leverage matter that you were pouring like a ton of time into. Like, there's a lot going on in baseball right now, and there's a lot of teams that are just trying to like get through day by day in a, you know, a dog day summer that has arrived earlier than maybe it has in prior seasons. So it's not just the Blue Jays, but as you mentioned, very obviously the Blue Jays need help, and they're clearly working to get that help. They've brought in Romo. I think they should have brought in Elias as well, but at least you've brought in Romo. We'll see what he can do for you, but those additions need to continue, certainly.
That's right. Heard it here first, called by you on last week's podcast, that those Mariners could be coming to Toronto. So, you know, I think Matt Gage, of course, he's someone who should be in leverage, deserves to be in leverage. Trent Thornton, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, he's generally been good. He's struggled the last couple of weeks. I don't have a problem with him being used in leverage. And then it's like, I've heard the calls for Adrian Hernandez to be called up, and I think he'll still get his shot. But the reasoning, as I understand it, for potentially going to Romo ahead of an Adrian Hernandez would be, this is your way to have both in the organization. Whereas if you select Hernandez, Romo's elsewhere, you don't get to take a shot on him. So if Romo comes up, isn't good, you DFA him, that spot goes to someone like an Adrian Hernandez, maybe as soon as in a couple weeks, because you're getting Romo for the minimum. You can do some different things. But this whole stretch really underscores the importance of a Jimmy Garcia. You know, obviously Nate Pearson, Julian Merriweather, those guys are out for extended stretches right now. So you just have this lack of answers leading up to Romano in the bullpen. It's been the case all year, and it's certainly an issue for this team right now.
Yeah, we talked about Hernandez last week, right? Like, he's going to get his opportunity. I promise you that it is coming. There's certainly skepticism about whether his fastball is going to play at the big league level at 91. And like, if the changeup isn't working the way he needs it to, I mean, there really isn't a safety net there when it's a 91 mile an hour fastball. And if hitters eliminate your changeup and they can sit on that fastball and tee off on it, I mean, it could look like Max Castillo's debut, right? And Castillo obviously bounces back really nicely in his second outing, but like, we saw what happened to him against the Yankees when, you know, he wasn't pitching quite as finely. Like, the margins are so thin at the big league level. It's, you know, Romo, like, I'm gonna enjoy watching him pitch, I think, because I think he is just an enjoyable guy to watch pitch. Like, he's different, and I like guys that are different. You know, when the Jays were considering Romo, I was talking to someone, and kind of the thought is he's still a very uncomfortable look for a hitter, and still very tough to pick up the ball. And you just, it's like, it's Simber-esque, right? Like, it's uncomfortable. Like, you never feel like good in the box. You never feel like you're going to square this guy up because of the arm, you know, the ball's coming from a weird slot and it's moving in a weird way. And you don't see a lot of those guys typically. And I think that's why Romo like still does get hitters to expand quite a bit. Like it's why, that's why, you know, everyone knows what he's trying to do. And he's been doing the same thing for a number of years, and it still is working for him sometimes when he's locating. And I guess like the best thing you can say about it is that it worked really well last year. Like great contact management in 2021, the best hard hit rate in baseball, 98th percentile exit velocity. So it could work again. If it worked at 38 last year, I think it could work at 39 this year. I think that, you know, he probably just needs to refine the command a little bit and work some better areas of the zone, and obviously stay off the plate, because when he's on the heart of the plate, he does get crushed. And that's why he's given up the homers that he has this year. But yeah, more than anything, it's just going to be kind of fun to watch him try to do it, because he's an interesting cat. And sometimes it's just kind of cool to watch a guy throw like 8 sliders in a row from a weird slot. I don't know if you want to use him back to back with Simber. Like, would you use Simber 6th, Romo 7th? Like, to me, they're a little too similar. You might want to mix in somebody with a bit more velo and a, you know, a bit different location in there. But I'm interested to just kind of see the experiment and see how it plays out.
Yeah, and I wonder how long it lasts. Like, to me, if he's on this roster on August the 3rd, the day after the trade deadline, then like he's pitching really well. Like something is going right. It's going better than expected. I think it's almost like a 1 month live tryout, maybe a 10 day live tryout, kind of see what happens. Don't they have those contracts in the NBA, like a 10 day contract?
10 days, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like this is almost that. And then if it doesn't work, then he's going to be gone and they'll try to find someone else to help. I mean, certainly you're not going to be beholden to a guy with a, whatever it is, 70 RA throwing 86 miles an hour. You have to be willing to move on. You have to be willing to be ruthless. And so there are no assurances that Romo is with this team for very long. But in the meantime, like you say, he'll be an interesting guy to watch. And they have, yeah, a continued need. We say it almost every single week. It's just become more and more clear. And to me, the only way through this, really, like, I don't see Trent Thornton suddenly becoming the Blue Jays version of Clay Holmes or Michael King. Like, he's useful. He is who he is. You want him on your roster. So I think they're going to have to trade for that guy if they want to get him. And in the meantime, I think you have to outslug people. I think you have to score 7-8 runs. And the good thing is they have an offense that is elite. They have an offense that can do that. This lineup is incredible right now. So they need that to be the way that they win, and to just outslug everyone and make the wins happen that way.
Yeah, it's tough with Thornton because like you love his stuff, right? Like, he's got some velo, he's got a ton of spin. Like, you just watch the stuff move and like there's so much action on it. He just kind of seems to lack the control and command to leverage it in spots when he really needs to. Like, you look at that Ref Snyder plate appearance on Tuesday, and the first pitch is a slider that's like nowhere near ball to ball, right? It's never on the plate. It's not going to get a swing. And the next pitch is a fastball right down the middle, right? And I guarantee you that's not where he's trying to throw either of those pitches, right? Like, he's trying to tunnel his slider and his fastball, but he's just not able to get into the lane that he needs to with either of them. And one of them misses by way too much off the plate, and the other one misses by way too much on the plate. Rob Ref Snyder hits it like 425 feet, right? So like I'm sure that, you know, the Blue Jays are working with him as much as possible to try to get him, you know, just to be able to have to harness the stuff a bit better, because it does seem like he could be like one of those like King Holmes types where it's like maybe there is a eureka moment, right? And maybe it's like one of these Orioles guys who they bring in and they just kind of change the grip and all of a sudden the ball like moves differently. Like, maybe there is like an aha moment and he puts it all together and he's, I don't know, I'll never give up on a reliever, man. Like, think about how many relievers we've seen like find something late in their careers, right? It's so volatile. That's why it's like building an effective bullpen is like one of the hardest things to do as a front office, like building a really good bullpen, because you just don't know. Like, injuries happen, performance drops off, the peaks and the valleys are enormous. I mean, it really is difficult to sort of, you know, through that volatility, you feel really good about what you put together in a bullpen. Like, bullpens are really good until they're not. It happens really quickly. So, you know, like Thornton is like a microcosm of that. You know, he could put it together, you know, and he could be really useful, but you know, you'd like him to be working on putting it together outside of a 2-run lead against the Red Sox in the 7th inning. It's not really the spot you want him doing that. But your depth has been eroded by injuries to Garcia, Merriweather, Richards, Vasquez, Saucedo, Pearson and the lack of somebody emerging from within as well. Like you can't just like rush a Zulueta or a Frasso to the big leagues. Like it takes time. Like you need to, you know, you need to make sure you're putting guys in the best possible positions to succeed. There hasn't really been like a great story to come out of the minors other than like, you know, Matt Gage to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's worth zooming out to a couple months ago, you know, the Jays are breaking camp from Dunedin in April of this year. And Trent Thornton was one of the last guys to be told he made the team, you know, along with Gosuke Kato and a couple others. And now here we are, not that much time has passed, and he is pitching these leverage innings. And I don't think that's a mistake by Pete Walker and John Schneider and Charlie Montoyo sitting there in the dugout and trying to map out the last innings of the game. It's like they use Simber and leverage in that situation. They're trying to get through a couple more innings. What are you going to do? They just don't have great options. And so it's a big test for this front office. Building a bullpen is hard. This front office is not currently making it look easy. You know, we'll see if that changes in the next couple weeks, in the next month or so, if they can surprise us or make that bold strike within the industry or find that perfect bounce back, whether it's Sergio Romo or somebody else. That's their test right now, because it'll help them get there, and it'll help them once they're in the playoffs. Clearly what they have now is not enough.
You just said the name Gosuke Kato, and I had to be like, was that this season?
Oh, yeah. My,
that feels like years ago.
Yeah, that was mere months ago.
Right? Not that long ago at all. And the hard thing with like trying to build repair a bullpen in season, I guess, is that, you know, your David Robertsons of this world and your Daniel Bards, their teams aren't trading them today unless you vastly overpay. And one of the dumbest things you can do as front office is vastly overpay for a reliever, a rental reliever at that. You don't want to be written up on Fangraphs for that type of move. So those, you know, the Cubs and the Rockies, like clubs that have players like that to deal, they're going to wait until closer to the deadline, and they're going to build that market a bit more and get some more bidders involved and try to up the prices. Like, they don't really have incentive to move those guys today. Look, if David Robertson gets traded tomorrow for, you know, whatever, some like middling BC prospects, you can crush the Blue Jays for not being in on that, right? Like, that's a deal the Blue Jays absolutely need to be in on. But those deals aren't happening right now. What's happening is like the Sergio Romos of the world. Like, that's what's available. Is the, you know, Roenis Elias was available on waivers. Like, that's what you're looking at. So the Blue Jays are exploring those alternatives and opportunities, as they would say, obviously. But that is like, that's what you have available to you right now. Otherwise, they're just going to have to sort of weather this for a few weeks and try to get through it until mid, late July, when they can actually try to make a move on some of those like higher leverage relief additions come the deadline.
Score 8 runs a game. That's my recommendation. If they're looking for any strategic initiatives or approaches, score 8, maybe 9, you know, mix in an 11. Like, that's my recommendation to Charlie Montoyo.
Sounds easy enough to me. I'll let Charlie know. That's what you should do. Let's step away. But when we come back, talk a bit of offense, talk a bit more pitching, all that and so much more. And we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers, Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And it is time now for Keeping It Light, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben, today on Keeping It Light, I'm going to ask you to imagine a scenario for me. It's early October. It's the Wild Card Series, the American League, Toronto Blue Jays, Boston Red Sox. It's game 3. This series is being played at Fenway Park because the Red Sox edged the Blue Jays in the standings. It's 9th inning. Blue Jays and Red Sox each won one game apiece. This is winner takes all time. It's the top of the 9th. Tanner Houck's on the hill. Games at Fenway Park, remember. Red Sox have a 1-run lead. You got 2 out. You got Bradley Zimmer standing at second base as a pinch runner. Who do you want to see coming to the plate for Toronto Blue Jays? Any hitter in that spot.
So your season ends unless you can score that run.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so they actually have some good choices. This is a team where you can make a strong case for probably four guys, maybe more, but Springer, Bo, Kirk, Vlad, any of those guys would be great to have up at the plate in that situation. Now, to me, I don't want to overcomplicate this. You need a single, a double, a triple, or a homer. Any kind of base hit, the run scores. And a walk isn't bad. So I want Vladdy in that situation. I think that he's one of the best hitters in baseball. He's off to a quote-unquote slower start, but he's still on a 40-homer pace and hitting 270. We saw what he could do last year. I think better things are ahead for him offensively in the second half. We know that, you know, he can hit any pitcher in any park. We know that he's not going to be intimidated by the moment based on what we've seen from him so far in his career. So I just bank on his power, his bat-to-ball skills, his plate approach. You've got some other good candidates, but to me, Vlad Jr. is just the simplest, best choice. That's coming.
And now Vladdy belts one. Line drive to left, and it's gone. Well, what a fun start to the afternoon for the Toronto Blue Jays.
There's nothing wrong with that decision. I think my head probably says Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think my heart wants to say Alejandro Kirk, because the heart rate is not going to rise for Alejandro Kirk. I don't know that Alejandro Kirk's heart rate has ever changed. Like, I think it's just constantly been just a steady line his entire life. I don't think there's any situation in which it's ever gone up. So I trust him to be extremely calm and poised in that situation. I trust him to make contact because he really doesn't strike out, and he gets his bat to, you know, pitches all over the zone. And look, Tanner Houck's a tough guy to square up. So I trust Alejandro Kirk to put that ball in play and probably put in play at a high rate of speed. I'm going to go George Springer.
Whoa.
I don't necessarily believe in clutch, both George Springer, I sort of do. And I've just kind of seen it too many times. And I know that he's going to give me a tremendous plate appearance. And I know that, like, he is not going to get beat, and he is not going to give in, and he is going to foul off a ton of pitches, and that it is going to be like this Shakespearean play, this plate appearance. Or it's going to be over in one pitch. Or he's just going to, like, lace the first pitch off ambush. The monster, right? It's either going to be that, or it's going to be like 12 pitches, incredible to watch, and he's going to come up with like this weird like opposite field flare in the other direction, you know, when he finally gets like Houck to throw himself and he can do something with after fouling off like six or seven pitches that were all just like right around the edge of the box. So yeah, I just seen George Springer in those big moments just like find another level in a way that a lot of players can't. So I'm gonna go with Springer there.
For George Springer, who walked and scored in the first. He gets a breaking ball and sends it to deep center field, and it's gone. It is off the facing of the lower deck out in left center, a home run for Springer.
And it's another reason that's a good choice is in that situation, Alex Cora might just walk whoever's up because you might want the force at every base. So really, it might fall to the hitter who's behind that. And if you're going to Bo and then Vlad behind Springer, that's a great spot to be. In the Jays lineup, as we saw on Tuesday, Springer, I mean, of course, he wasn't the hero. Kirk deservedly, you know, set that whole thing up and Vladdy converted it. But Springer's walk in that situation kind of speaks to your point about his plate approach, about his ability to come through in big spots against some tough arms. So, yeah, it's the rare lineup in baseball. The Dodgers, Astros, Yankees, they would each have multiple good choices, Atlanta as well. But the Jays, I mean, they're one of the best, most incredible groups of hitters that you're going to see, especially at the top of that order. There's really no bad choice.
All right, Ben, I'm going to do to you what you did to me last week. Then I'm just going to like sit back and enjoy it. Explain to me, Yusei Kikuchi.
Oh, man. I mean, there's not going to be a lot to enjoy with this explanation because it's not going to be a very fun one for Jays fans, and it's probably not going to be that long. I mean, I'm not sure that I have answers any more than we did this time last week, other than, you know, we've said it all year, but, you know, there seems to be unwillingness or a lack of commitment to go to the fastball. We saw the velocity down a little bit on his breaking pitches as well, which is never good. The hard breaking pitches are great. You love to see hard breaking pitches. And every time that the breaking pitches lose some velocity, you're going to see some effectiveness go down with it. So honestly, man, I don't know. I think you have to continue rolling with him, especially when you have 8 games in 7 days. This is not the time to get too fine and try to replace him with Casey Lawrence, for example. So you see what he can do. You trust in his stuff, which is mostly there. But we're getting to a point where if he does not start producing at least 4 or 5 innings of usable baseball, then you got to think about fake IL. You got to think about ways to get him a chance to regroup away from the challenges of major league lineups.
If Hyunjin Ryu was healthy and just Hyunjin Ryu-ing his way through like a league average 4-1 ERA, 150 inning season, taking the ball every 5-6 days and just doing his thing, and Ross Stripling was in the bullpen as a long man, do you think Yusei Kikuchi would still be in the rotation today?
I don't see why you would have him in the rotation, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, he's there because they need him, not because he deserves to be there. On merit, no. Like, especially, you look at the season-long numbers, he's walking, you know, compare him to qualified starters in Major League Baseball. His walk rate is among the worst, if not the worst. He is not doing himself any favors by walking so many hitters. The results have not been good, and more to the point, lately, they have been worse. So, on merit, he does not deserve to be in this starting rotation. It's just that there's no one who's pushing him out at this point, so they have to keep trying and keep seeing if there's an answer to be found.
And that's my point here, is that like I think the best thing for Yusei Kikuchi right now is a break. Like I think the best thing for him to do is just kind of like step away and like reset, decompress, work on some of the things he needs to work on. The Blue Jays don't have that luxury. Like, they just can't. I mean, who else is going to step into this rotation? You're already using Hatch on Saturday in the doubleheader. Casey Lawrence is the next man up. So, like, I think, and then you've really, like, eaten into your depth. Then your 6 starters, I don't know, Max Castillo for, like, 4 innings, right? So
it'd be a bullpen game.
Yeah. Now you're back to bullpen games, right? So I think you have to let Yusei Kikuchi go out on Thursday, and you have to have a bullpen ready behind him, and you have to have a very short leash, and you have to be ready for the very real possibility that he can't command his fastball and that you have to get him out there very early. But you have to also roll those dice and take the chance that like maybe he's the month of May guy again, which we like just saw in the month of May when it was working, right? And you know, that's with a situation like him, like it could, where it's not a physical thing and it's very clear what needs to happen here and what the mindset needs to be on the mound. Like it could turn in a hurry, and you really need to hope that it's going to turn in a hurry because you don't have a better option. But like if Ryu was healthy, I really think Yusei Kikuchi would be going to the IL with a neck strain or whatever, you know, some back inflammation or shoulder fatigue or whatever you want to call it. And that he would be then working on the adjustments that he's trying to work on away from competition, because Yusei Kikuchi is trying to make a lot of adjustments this year, right? Like he's trying to up his fastball usage. They ditched the cutter. You got to throw the slider harder. They want him working faster, better tempo between pitches. They eliminated like that hesitation in his delivery. They got different sequences they want him using and getting back to. They've worked for him in the past. They've tweaked his catcher setup. They want him using different lanes. Like there's so many things he's working on. It's hard to execute on all that stuff every 5 days in competition when the results matter against the best hitters in the world. And I think Yusei Kikuchi, just reading the body language on the mound during games, seems to be doubting a lot of the things that he's trying to do. Like we come on here every week and we're like, yeah, it's baffling to us, it's baffling to the Blue Jays, it's baffling to everybody why he won't throw his fastball ball more often on the plate. And his last time out, I think he just couldn't. Like it was very obvious why he didn't have trust in that pitch that time, because when it left his hand, it was liable to either be right over the heart of the plate or to fly behind Andrew McCutchen and hit his bat behind his head, which is something that literally happened. So like I can understand why he didn't have trust in it in that start, but he needs to be locating that pitch. Like that's what this is all built off of, is that 95, 96, 97 mile an hour fastball in the zone. Like this, everything else collapses without that. It starts there. It starts a fastball command. He very clearly didn't have it his last time out. There's no way of knowing if he's going to have it his next time out. But I think the Blue Jays are just in a circumstance right now with the schedule and with their pitching situation where they have to put him out on the mound and see if he has it.
Yeah, history would tell us that he likely will get back to a point of being useful. That point is not right now. You know, you look at what he's done in the major leagues, he's been a useful major league pitcher, and his fastball command has been better than it is right now. So there are pathways back to that. I don't know what they are. I don't envy the people trying to find out what those pathways are, but clearly he's here now because they need him. And we don't know when that point is going to come that he's going to have more fastball command, but it's the essential building block. And how often do we hear pitchers talk about fastball command as being the basis for everything else that they're trying to do? I mean, it's clearly fundamental to pitching, and he doesn't have it right now.
No. And the velocity being down as well, by the way, is like not great. You hope that that's just because he was aiming, like just because he was like, all right, let me just take something off my pitches just so that I can get them on the plate. If he comes back out on Thursday and the velo is down again, now you're really into uh-oh territory in a really big way. We'll see. See what we get. What I know is the Blue Jays need to have some length in that bullpen on Thursday, which makes like Wednesday's Alec Manoa start like sneaky important, because you need Manoa to go deep. Like we already saw Manoa get extended last time out beyond where the Blue Jays probably would have wanted him pitching just because they needed to cover the innings on Wednesday against the Red Sox. I mean, they really needed Alec Manoa to cover some innings, save the bullpen so that it is there for not only Kikuchi on Thursday, but then Barrios on Friday as well. Another guy who you're going to want to have like some bullpen behind, because another guy who you're just not certain what you're going to get. He could go out and be the Jose Barrios we saw like four starts ago, and just like, yeah, I'm going to go like seven innings and allow a run and strike out double digits. He might also be a guy who can't get out of the third inning, which we've also seen recently. Let me put you in another impossible spot, Ben. Explain Jose Barrios and explain what's going on
there. I think my explanation there is going to be about as good as my Kikuchi one. So, you know, not a lot of answers, unfortunately. And I think, you know, you look at that schedule, right? The Thursday, you go Kikuchi, you go Barrios, then you go doubleheader. Like, it's going to be a busy stretch for the Jays bullpen. No doubt about that. So for Barrios, I mean, it's the stuff seems to be there. I think a lot of this comes down to fastball location, fastball command. The fastball for him this year has not been effective. If you look at the numbers on how hard it's being hit, what kind of damage hitters are doing against it, it is not an effective pitch. Now, he's still throwing it pretty hard. So I don't think it's purely a question of velocity or of health. I think a lot of this is he is putting it over the plate in the wrong places. So that's kind of all I've got on Barrios. I honestly don't know, Arden. Like, if you have answers, you're many steps ahead of me on what ails Jose Barrios right now.
No, I don't have answers. I don't think Jose Barrios has answers. I don't think the Blue Jays pitching people have answers. They thought they had answers, you know, a few weeks ago when it came to his sequencing and like how he was setting pitches up, how he was tunneling, the lanes that he was using. They thought they had an answer when they tweaked his catcher setup, when they moved him on the rubber. They thought they had an answer after the White Sox outing, which didn't go very well either. They felt like he was a little too closed off and he wasn't really being directional to the plate with his shoulders. They felt there's a little adjustment that he could make there. None of it has proven to be the ultimate answer. I mean, to me, it's something with his curveball. Like, I agree with you, his fastball's getting hammered, but I think it actually, in a backwards way, is starting with his curveball, which just doesn't seem to be fooling hitters and doesn't seem to be getting the reactions that it has earlier in his career. In that Milwaukee outing, he didn't generate a whiff with his curveball. Like, not a single swinging strike. Like, that's a huge red flag to me. He had only four swinging strikes in that outing against Milwaukee. I mean, you need to go back like over 100 starts to like find, you know, how many outings Jose Barrios has had with only four swinging strikes. Like, it's not many, man. This is a guy who generates whiffs. Like, this is a guy who's done that throughout his career. So he's just not fooling hitters either off the plate or on, which is to me really head scratching, because like you said, the velo still seems to be there. He had that weird start against Anaheim where the velo was way down. But then that was, again, another like adjustment the Blue Jays thought they'd found with him, with his throwing program and his lifting in between outings. And that wasn't it. At least the velo on the fastball got back up. And I think the curveball velocity has been relatively consistent year over year. The spin rate's down a little, and like the horizontal, the vertical movement is down a little. To me, it's not down enough where it'd be like that is the issue, but there clearly is something with the curveball where it just is, hitters just either are seeing it differently or reacting to it differently. Like, it's just not creating the same outcomes that it has in prior years. I think that if he can get his curveball back to a place where it is getting hitters to expand, it is getting weak contact, it is getting swing and miss and chase, then the fastball will play better. But because that curveball hasn't been there, I think the hitters are looking at that fastball and saying, we can hammer this thing, and then Brios paying the price for it.
And he also doesn't seem to have the changeup, really. He hasn't really found that feel for it to this point in the year. So a long year ahead, a long tenure ahead for Jose Berríos with six more years. That's probably a contract that if you could snap your fingers and undo it, I think you would do that if you're the Jays. But he's here. They have to figure out what exactly is going on. And I think that he'll provide value. Don't get me wrong. I think he'll be a good pitcher this year. I think he'll be a good pitcher next year and in 2025 and beyond. But $120 million for that six-year chunk is a lot of money.
This is the tough thing for the Blue Jays right now, especially during a stretch like this, as you were mentioning, is that so you've got, you know, a bullpen having to carry big innings behind Kikuchi and Berríos. You've got a bullpen that has to carry innings behind Ross Stripling, who is pitching magnificently, but the Blue Jays clearly do not trust a third trip through. So, like, for Ross Stripling, like, he's going to face 18, 19 batters, and that's it. Like, maybe 20. But, like, even when Ross Stripling is pitching as well as you're going to see him pitch, the Blue Jays don't let him see much of a third trip through a lineup. So you know that just by design, your bullpen's going to have to log some innings that day. So three times out of five, you're needing your bullpen, and your bullpen's really thin right now. Like, that's sort of the double whammy that the Blue Jays are facing at the moment. Like you said, you better be scoring a lot of runs with the way that things are presently constituted and constructed and the way guys are performing right now, because the pitching situation, it's so funny how like a season turns, right? Remember when the Blue Jays starting rotation was carrying this team and the offense wasn't performing at all? What did we talk about for 6 weeks of the season? That was it. Wow, starting rotation's been great. Kevin Gausman is phenomenal. These bats are not coming alive. When are the bats going to come alive? Maybe they're not as good offensively as we thought they were. Now the bats come back around. Now you look, you know, up and down this roster, and like even Kevin Biggio is having like a tremendous time at the plate right now. The Blue Jays get contributions from everybody offensively, and now the starting pitching has fallen off a cliff, and the bullpen is unreliable. The Blue Jays just can't get everything lined up at once.
And look, I mean, the goal isn't to have everything clicking perfectly on June 29th. Like, you don't get a prize for that. And so for the Yankees, like, good for them. They're 35 games over 500. Like, they're playing incredible. They are having a perfect season so far. But again, like, they might be peaking too early. By the time they get to October, they could be a 115-win team that's depleted, that has another reliever down, that has starters that aren't pitching well, and Stanton's on the IL, and Donaldson's banged up, and his calf is barking. And, like, they could be peaking at the wrong time. So for the Jays, they're not peaking right now. That's okay. If they're peaking on October the 5th, whenever the regular season ends and the playoffs start, you got to get there. But, you know, you have to, your goal is to be peaking then. And if you go in with Gausman and Manoa and you've got a couple, you know, Berríos turns it around, which again, I think he will. And then you have a couple relief additions. Great. Like, that's fine. But you just have to get enough wins in the meantime and trust that, you know, once you're not trust, but plan to make sure that when you're in October, you're really performing at your best.
I do want to end on a good note, because like, it's so funny the way we talk about the Blue Jays, who are like 10 games over 500. I haven't actually tabulated this, but I would bet on pace to finish with more wins than they did last season. And last season was a successful season with 91 wins. And I would bet you the Blue Jays are looking at, you know, being on pace for 92, 93. Yeah, right? So they're better. what was the offseason goal? Get better. They got better. So, you know, it, like the Blue Jays are in playoff position, 10 games over 500. Like things are going well. As we sit here today on June 29th, they have a better record than the Red Sox, better record than the Rays. So do want to end on something positive. Is Alejandro Kirk the best hitting catcher in baseball? Like, are you ready to say that? Because statistically, he is.
The 0-1 hit high and deep to center field. Davis going back, and Kirk has done it again. What an unbelievable roll he is on right now as he launches one to center field, and the Blue Jays have an early 3-0 lead.
Blue Jays, yeah, presently, he is the best hitting catcher in baseball.
Now,
wow. Okay, so as he is. I mean, there's wow. No, I
but
debate.
Isn't that crazy to
yeah.
say?
Yeah, it is wow. crazy to say. It's unbelievable. It's so cool. It's such a, and he's young too. It's really impressive. Okay, so now if we're projecting forward from this point on, I think it's pretty close. I mean, Sal Perez has been injured. I'm not sure if he's still on the IL, but you know, he's an incredible season last year. So he might be more out of the equation this year. You look at Will Smith and the quality of contact numbers that he has in Los Angeles, like that is an incredible offensive catcher who just barrels the ball and controls the strike zone well. But then so does Kirk. So, you know, I'm not sure out of those two, you know, who you'd have ahead. Real Muto is not having a great year offensively. Who am I missing from that discussion as we kind of project forward?
Yeah, the Contreras bros.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, they're having great years. Great years. Right. But Kirk's in that discussion. He has to be.
Yankees fans like Jose Trevino. Yeah. Contreras. Yeah. Real Muto. Kirk. Smith. Like, that's kind of your like top five, right?
It's got it.
I don't think we're forgetting any. I don't know if Christian Vasquez really belongs up there. Rutschman, maybe someday. Not yet. You know, Sal Perez, yeah, that's pretty much it, man. But like Alejandro Kirk, kind of the best hitting catcher in baseball, which is crazy considering like coming into the season, it was, are the Blue Jays going to get him onto this roster? Was kind of the,
yeah.
You want to talk about like spring training storylines you can dunk on now in late June. That was like a conversation of is Alejandro Kirk going to be on this team?
Right, because Reese McGuire was with them.
Yeah, because Reese McGuire existed. You know, and then what kind of playing time they're going to find for Kirk was another one. And here it's like, you can't, and it's, you got to be careful, right? You don't want to put too much workload on him. And the Blue Jays clearly are very cautious with the way that they deploy him. You don't often see him catching on back-to-back days. Typically, you kind of see the catch, DH, catch, DH, catch, DH, maybe a day off in there somewhere. You want to find that right balance so that he can, you know, be as productive as he's been at the plate. But man, any best iteration of the Blue Jays batting order has Kirk's bat in the middle of it, because he's just that locked in right now. It's incredible what he's become. It's going to be an interesting conversation when Danny Jansen is healthy again, because I think the Blue Jays are missing a lot of the things Danny Jansen brings that don't turn up on a baseball savant page. I don't think there's any column that you can sort by for the game management traits that Danny Jansen provides, but I do think they are very important. I do think they would be very useful when you say Kikuchi is pitching and shaking from his fastball. I do think they would be like very useful for, you know, Kevin Gausman outings. You know, when maybe the splitter isn't getting the swings that he wants it to, just finding different things to do. You know, for a lot of these Blue Jays pitchers, man, like I just think that Danny Jansen is like such a competent game manager and handler of pitchers. That is something that takes a lot of time to develop. That's an experience thing. That's something Alejandro Kirk and Gabriel Moreno just haven't had the time to really learn and develop yet in their young careers. It's something that Danny Jansen has. So it'll be an interesting conversation when Jansen returns and you've got like your best hitter in Kirk, this is among the catchers, your best hitter in Kirk, your best defender, I'd say, in Moreno, and your best game manager in Jansen, what you prioritize and what you maximize in your lineups and how you deploy guys going forward if all three of those guys are healthy.
To me, it starts with Kirk. It starts with getting the bat into the lineup as often as possible, because that's the biggest lever that you're working with there. And he's just been so good. So it starts with that. I think you're likely pairing him with Manoah, which, by the way, I wouldn't be surprised if that's an All-Star game opening, if they begin
Shane
the All-Star
McClernand
game.
Might have something to say about that.
Or Justin Verlander, or, you know, there's some other pitchers having some great years. So it's not a guarantee, but I just wouldn't be surprised if that's the way things shake out. And so Kirk will be catching periodically. and then you got to get him into the lineup regularly as a DH. And then, yeah, beyond that, you need Moreno in there somewhat often. He and Stripling have clearly worked together very well. You want Moreno playing at least 3 times a week, I would think. And then Jansen's going to be part of that mix too. And I think you can be open to trades on Jansen, but I don't think you have to force it. And I think you have to be really confident in those 22, 23-year-old catchers if you're going to even consider moving Jansen. So there's, as you're saying, for all the reasons that you outlined right there, Jansen brings something very real to this pitching staff.
Very real, but also very intangible, which is what makes it difficult. Because you can like look at the exit velos with Kirk and, you know, the bad ball stuff. And with Moreno, you can look at the pop times, the arm strength and all that. With Jansen, there's no metric that you can go to for like, oh, hey, Yusei Kikuchi is more confident on the mound when he throws to this guy. And, you know, Danny Jansen can go make a mound visit and like kind of like let him know what he needs to be doing in this moment. There's nothing on Fangraphs for that. So it'd be interesting. I still do wonder if there's, you know, a point where they have to send Moreno back to AAA just to play more regularly. Yeah. It's great seeing Moreno up right now. It's great seeing him perform at the big league level. And I think he's a big league player. I don't think he's playing enough right now. And I think that the best thing for him and the best thing for the Blue Jays at a certain point will be for him likely to go back to AAA and just play regularly and then return later in the season when you're not as worried about those playing time concerns. And it's like, it's win time, put him on the roster, deploy him when you need him and when you need your best offensive lineup out there. But right now, the rate that he's playing, I think you'd like him to be getting some more reps.
Yeah. I mean, not only for 2025 or 2023, but there's an argument to be made that that benefits the 2022 Blue Jays, because if he's getting reps and learning and developing in AAA in, let's say, July 10th to, you know, August 31st, then he might be more ready and more capable on October the 10th when you're in that situation of Fenway Park and he's, you know, facing a Red Sox reliever in that situation, or he's getting a start with Stripling and you need him to be ready for that moment. You still have chances this year to prepare him for that moment.
Yeah, and it's still been a beneficial stretch, him being up in the majors, right? Like, he's learned, you know, the day-to-day, the rhythms. He's taken away a lot of that unfamiliarity and the unusualness and a lot of the nerves being up in the big leagues. He just gets it. Like, he just knows what life in the big leagues is like now, which is, again, another thing you'll never find on the Savant page. But, like, all that stuff before and after the game, the travel, all the meetings and everything that goes on in the big leagues away from the lights and off the field, getting accustomed and acclimated to that matters, too. So I think Gabriel Moreno is able to, will derive some benefits from this stretch so that, you know, if he does go back down, when he comes back up, he'll just be ready to step back in and contribute. That's going to be it for us. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Swelling. You can email us at theletters@sportsnet.ca. I want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Ondrod, and we'll talk to you next time on At The Letters.